The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources that may be available to you. I'm Noah Davis, your host. Elder abuse, what is it, how, and why does it happen? According to the Center for Disease Control, elder abuse is an intentional act or failure to act by a caregiver or another person in a relationship involving an expectation of trust that causes or creates a risk of harm to an older adult. An older adult is defined as over 60, and harm can be physical abuse, emotional, sexual, exploitation, including financial exploitation, fraud, neglect, and abandonment. In 2012, less than 20% of the U.S. population was over 60, but estimates say by 2050, between 25 and 29% of Americans will be over 60. That's between 1 in 4 and 1 in 3 Americans over 60, so obviously a huge demographic that we're talking about. According to the National Council on Aging, 1 in 10 Americans over the age of 60 have experienced some form of abuse, and the numbers are believed to be greater because they're underreported. In almost two-thirds of the reported cases, the abuser is another family member. In Washington, Adult Protective Services program received some 13,136 reports of abuse in 2006 alone. And my numbers are a little bit aged, and that's in part, I think, because the public doesn't give this issue as much respect or exposure as it should. All of us have aging parents, or we know someone that has aging parents, and we're always wondering who's going to take care of them, and no doubt they're wondering who's going to take care of them. So it's an important topic for all of us, and one that we're all going to have to grapple with at one time or another. That's why we're fortunate to have with us today on Know Your Rights, Pierce County Prosecutor Mark Lindquist and Senior Deputy Prosecutor Sven Nelson. Mark, welcome. Sven, welcome.
Thanks, Noah. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about this with you.
Yes, glad to be here.
So let's talk about some context here. Elder abuse seems to be a really big problem, and as I mentioned, it's not getting a lot of public attention. So what resources are available to them? And you might disagree with me, and you could talk about that, but how does the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office, what role do they play in this? And how can people get more information about elder abuse, and what can they do?
It's our job in the prosecutor's office to vigorously prosecute elder abuse cases, and it's also our job to prevent elder abuse. We want to protect elders. We want to protect, as you said, our family, our friends, our neighbors. And as you pointed out in your introduction, we are an aging population. I was talking about that a few years ago with Pierce County Sheriff's Detective Ed Troyer. And to meet that challenge of an aging population and the fact that we were starting to see more elder abuse cases, especially financial elder abuse, I formed an elder abuse unit in the office. And the first person to head up that unit was Deputy Prosecutor Erica Nohavik. And she had a line about that, which is this. Mark says there's no I in team, but in fact there is an I in team because I am the entire team. And she was. We've now grown to a five-person team, which Deputy Prosecutor Sven Nelson heads up. And you mentioned about the awareness of it. It's actually been our experience. We completely agree with you. It is a large problem. But we have also found in the last couple of years it's a problem people are becoming aware of. They want information about it. They want to know what they can do to better protect themselves and their families. I think last year we did over 100 speaking appearances, Sven, and talked about elder abuse with every one of those groups. I did many other appearances as well, but specifically to elder abuse, we've done a lot of public speaking on that and had a lot of good dialogues because, as I said earlier, we want to not only vigorously prosecute these cases, but prevent these cases. And a big part of prevention is raising awareness. And we've been out doing that, and that's why we appreciated the opportunity to talk about this with you. Sven, anything you want to add to that?
No, I agree with that completely. I think that we're all getting older, and these victims are aging as well. And, you know, we hear the stats that 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65 every day. And that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah. So what makes this population so vulnerable and so much different than other populations?
Sven, what would you say to that?
That's a hard thing to quantify. I mean, they are vulnerable in a lot of ways. They are not only aged, the biggest percentage of the population increase comes from those that are 85 and older, actually. That's expected to triple in the next 30 years or so. And people are living longer. And in part, that's causing inheritances to be slow at times. And so there's more financial exploitation happening because people are kind of wanting the inheritance more quickly, and they take advantage of the elders, and that makes them more vulnerable, I think, because they're living longer is in part a problem.
Yeah, when I think about elder abuse, and I think in the public listening, when they think about elder abuse, they think about a couple different examples. One is nursing home type abuse, where an elderly person has been put into the nursing home and they're abandoned there, or they're not given the essential services they need. But then there's another situation, and that's probably the more common situation, which is someone at home who hasn't been put into an elderly care facility because of funds, you know, financial restraints. And so they're at home, and who's going to take care of them? And it's probably going to be another family member, I bet, most of the time. And that person is stripping them of their financial resources. Is that more of a common type case, or what the type of elder abuse cases that you get, do they fall in distinct sort of columns?
They do, and that's the most common scenario that we see, is exactly that scenario where the elder is at home and there is a loved one who's caring for them, and sometimes the loved one has a drug and alcohol addiction, a gambling problem, or they're unemployed. I mean, that's a lot of the people that we deal with are people that don't just take advantage of that situation. And it for those that aren't family members, they could just be caregivers that are family friends or that are a long time friends that come in and try to help and then take advantage.
Yeah, and I think with this population, this vulnerable population, that they're in part vulnerable too because they isolate themselves. They're not as engaged yet. There are elderly people that don't leave the home. They stay there. They don't take walks anymore. They're not involved in clubs. They're not involved in recreational activities. So they don't have like a support network of people to talk to. And that isolation, you would think, kind of feeds into someone that would want to, an abuser that would want to or be able to take advantage of them. Do you kind of see that, the isolation as a part of the problem?
Right. And Sven, I've heard you actually tell groups, you know, when you're trying to protect your parents or other family members, make sure they're not isolated. Get them out into the community, make sure that they're talking to people.
That's great advice, and that's what they need, is check in on your neighbors, on your friends. And if
right.
you, a lot of people have family members that have passed away or that have moved out of state, and they're kind of stuck, and they just have one person to rely on, and that's not a good a good situation.
So when I talked about in the opening about not thinking that the public is the media is picking this up and making this the issue that that I think that it is, and it seems that the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office thinks it is too.
Right.
It only comes, it seems, to the media attention when there's a big case. And recently there was that Atlanta case. There's an Atlanta case, and we're going to end up taking this in the break in a moment. But and I'll tell you a little bit more about the facts when we come back. But basically, it was a World War II vet in an Atlanta caregiver case, and that was not provided the essential care that he needed, and he ended up dying in that facility. And that was all over the media for a while, and that made this topic hot news. So we'll take that case. I'll talk about it a little bit more on our return. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 minutes on Noah, Your Rights. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001. Handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. Waking up every day, lifting him from the bed to the wheelchair to the car to get him to therapy on time, it's no small task between the doctors and the diagnosis, but nothing can disable this love. This is my big brother, my hero. He's part of me, like my arms and legs. So I'll be his. See, there's no time for tired. This starts again tomorrow. He'll be waiting for me. I wake up for him. I know he needs me, but I'm the lucky one. Even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Or call 877-333-5885. Caregiving Resource Center. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Ken Griffey Sr.
And I'm Ken Griffey Jr. And we're proud to be men who speak up about advanced prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer runs in our family. I never had a problem talking about it until I was diagnosed. Aches, fatigue, or difficulty doing normal activities can mean that prostate cancer is advancing. Don't stay silent.
Step up to the plate and visit menwhospeakup.com to learn more.
This was a public service announcement from Zero, the end of prostate cancer.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, the show about your basic legal rights and resources available to you. With me is Prosecutor Mark Lindquist from the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, and also Sven Nelson, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney at the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office. We're talking about elder abuse, some elder law, talking about some, we're going to get into some cases that the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office has been involved in. We're going to talk about some resources that might be available to you if you know of someone that has been abused, that's in the vulnerable population, an elderly person. We're going to talk about some warning signs, and we're going to talk about some more details about either both resources and also resources and warning signs. I guess I'm just going to go back to those items because I think it's important that we cover those topics. But before we went on the break, I was talking about the recent case that hit the media's attention, and it was on TV and it was on the radio, and it brought the elder abuse issue back into the forefront. And that was this case out of Atlanta. And what happened was there's a World War II vet, and he was an 89-year-old man, and apparently at 4:30 in the morning, he had hit his warning button at this nursing care facility. And because he needed help, so he hit the alarm button. It took 8 minutes for the nurse to come to his room. 8 minutes, and alone, that would seem to be a negligent response to take 8 minutes to come to the room. But when she came to the room, she adjusted his tubing, but she didn't do anything else. Even though he was in distress, she just adjusted the tubing and left. An hour later, someone checked on him. He was unconscious. 2 hours later, they came back, and he was in cardiac arrest. And they didn't perform CPR, but at depositions, when there was a civil case that was filed, and probably likely a criminal case hadn't been filed yet because no one knew what had happened yet until the civil case had been filed. The civil case was filed, and during the deposition, the nurses testified that they had started CPR right away. As soon as they saw that he was in distress, they started CPR, and they didn't stop until a doctor said, "Don't stop." Turns out that the family of this 89-year-old man had a hidden camera in the room, because they had suspected abuse in this facility. They played that at the deposition for the nurse that said that she had conducted the CPR. It turns out they didn't do CPR on him. They hadn't been. When she came in the room, nobody was doing CPR. They're staring at him. He's asking for help. He's breathing his last breath, and they start laughing at him. And that's on this tape. I mean, it's like the most heart-wrenching story. And it's just, I think that goes to the biggest concern, or the basis for so many people's concern about these elder abuse cases. That's an extreme case. And I know that there are going to be different levels of cases that the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office is going to be involved in. But that is one of the most extreme cases. Have you had anything like that in Pierce County and Washington with facts like that?
Right. That is an extreme case. And unfortunately, we've seen some extreme cases in Pierce County as well. And as you said, they really are heart-wrenching. We recently had a case, and I believe it was the first in the state, where there was a felony murder conviction against a caregiver for gross negligence. Sven, you want to talk a little bit about the facts of that case?
Yeah, sure. It was a case where a caregiver had been licensed to have a adult family home and had several people in his home. He then lost his license. Actually, his wife was the one who got the license. And when he lost his license, everybody moved out except for one of his patients who wanted to stay. And he tried to get his license back and was trying to go through the process of doing that, went through classes on how to care for folks and things like that. But all the while, there was the gentleman that was living there developed some severe bed sores. And by the time he was taken into Good Samaritan Hospital, he was treated for several large and very deep pressure wounds. And the defendant said, well, no, I treated those by packing paper towels in his wounds and things like that. And the wound care professionals at Good Samaritan said it was just the worst case of
bed sores
yeah, that they'd ever seen. And
I remember that the doctor saying, and think how much doctors have seen, right. And the doctor saying this was the worst case of neglect we'd ever seen.
And right. was that caregiver just taking care of one vulnerable
he
adult?
Was yeah. Yes, just taking care of one. And so our office charged him with felony murder under the theory that he was attempting to commit the crime of criminal mistreatment, which is also basically called neglect. And by doing that, he caused the death of the victim in this case. And as Mark said, this was the first time that a jury, we believe, in Washington State had found a murder on those facts. Well, other yeah. counties, and we've tried that before, where the jury has come back with a manslaughter, a lesser included conviction.
I see. What was the name of the case that with the murder conviction? Do you remember?
That's State versus Larry Lee.
Okay.
And that is an extreme case, as we mentioned earlier. Most of the cases we see are, you know, more routine theft. But I want to point out something that is interesting about elder abuse cases to me. These financial elder abuse cases have a huge effect on people's physical well-being as well. One of the things that you see, and Sven and I have talked about this with groups, and I know I've heard this from our deputy prosecutors who handle these cases, when an elder's financial nest egg is wiped out, it doesn't just affect them financially. It has a measurable, observable physical effect as well.
Emotional effect and physical effect. Yeah, right. Sure. Because at that point, if you don't have any resources, you're not able to pay another caretaker to take care of you. Right. You're not able to provide for basic necessities in your life anymore. And you're wondering, who's going to help me?
It's extreme stress.
Right.
Yeah. And when you're young, you can recover from that because you have years to go and you can start building up your savings again.
Right.
When you're in your advanced age and you're at the end of things, it makes it very difficult.
You know what else I've found in cases that when I've done wills and estates and I've been with an elderly population, and there was one case I remember out of King County where the caretaker had been defrauding the elderly victim. She was a licensed nurse, and she had so much power and control over the woman's financial affairs over time. You know, it started with a dollar here and $5
right.
here and $10, and it just grew. And the next thing you know, you're writing $1,000, $2,000 checks because you're getting away with it, right? And isn't that part of the problem then? Is it's the other brothers or other sisters or kids or other family members that are checking out. They're not checked in to the problem. They end up blaming the victim. And you talked about the
right.
emotional toll when you lose all your money. What happens too is the other family members come in and say, how could you let this happen to yourself? Well, you know what I say? Where were you? Where were you?
Right. Part of preventing elder abuse is raising awareness. And that's why we spend so much time out in the community telling people, you know, here's what elder abuse looks like. Here's what you can do to prevent it. Here's what you can do to report it.
Well, this elder abuse unit that you've created, is it something that other counties are doing in the state of Washington, or is it kind of a novel thing?
Yeah, our elder abuse unit is something that we're seeing imitated by other counties, and that's the sincerest form of flattery, so we're good with that. You know, just like some of the other things we've done in the office, our gang unit, for example, has been a leader in the state. Our high priority offender program, where we go after career criminals, that's been a leader in the state. And we also have been a leader in the state when it comes to elder abuse. So we're happy to be a model for other counties. And the good news is that I do think we are making great progress in raising public awareness and media awareness about this issue. And it's important because you cannot stop elder abuse just through effective prosecution. You also have to make people aware of it.
Well, Mark, I know you're going to take off. You're going to leave us, and Sven's going to stay with us after the next break. But before you go, I want to talk about another area that I'm not that familiar with, and I'm hoping maybe you can shed some light on, and that's the interaction between the state and the county in terms of prosecution or regulation. Because it seems that when we talk about these caretakers having licenses, they get those through the state. And the state has an investigative wing, and that might be through DSHS. They end up, and they probably have an elder abuse unit too. Does the state prosecute these crimes too, or is it just a county by county basis? And how does that work in your experience?
Prosecuting crimes is usually felony crimes, the duty of the county prosecutor. The Attorney General's office does have a small criminal division, but the Attorney General's office is primarily a civil operation. So we do, and when I say we, I mean county prosecutors, we do the bulk of the prosecution of elder abuse cases. That said, we do very much view the Attorney General's office and the state as our partners in prevention and in education. Sven, you've been working, I think, with the Attorney General's office and other state partners.
Absolutely, yeah. We work closely with Adult Protective Services, and their legal counsel is the Attorney General's office, and so we've been working with them. We can talk more about that, I'm sure, later on, as we talk about our multidisciplinary team that we're working on to help end elder abuse in Pierce County, or at least to address it in a more positive way.
And is that state agency part of the DSHS?
Absolutely, yes.
And they refer prosecutions to the county then in many cases, or?
They refer them to law enforcement. They do their own investigation, but law enforcement does another investigation. Sometimes they're conjoined, but other times they just do their own investigations, and law enforcement then reviews it, passes it to our office, and then we decide whether there's enough to file charges on that we prosecute.
Well, Mark, as you go out to the public, and you talked about the different educational seminars that you've done to the public around the county, and talking about elder abuse and your unit, and you have an informational topic I see here too. It's really nice. It has some great information on there, and you're giving that out to the public. How do people schedule these informational topics with your department so that you can come out and speak to their group?
Excellent question, Noah. Sven, why don't you get that information out there? We will be happy to leave you with that information and to put that information out on the air. And the short version is they contact either Sven, who heads up the Elder Abuse Unit, or James Lynch, who handles communications for the office. And we're happy to get out and talk to community groups, you know, whether it be a Rotary or Kiwanis, Senior Living Center, you name it, we'll be there.
Well, I can also add it to the website, too. So, listeners, you're going to be able to go to www.knowyourrights.com, and you'll be able to get a link over to the information that Mark Lindquist, prosecutor for Pierce County, was just talking about now, so that you can set up an informational session, and he can come out and his team can come out and talk to you about elder abuse and the different resources that could be available to you if you're interested in that topic. Which is, again, this is a hugely important topic, and I just can't say that enough, because we are an aging population, and it affects all of us. And eventually, we're going to be part of that population, too.
Right.
So we want to make sure that these laws are in place. Well, Mark, you're going to be cutting out on us in just a moment. Is there anything else that you want to share with us before we end up taking a break here in a moment and you have to step out?
Yes, thank you. I want to compliment Deputy Prosecutor Sven Nelson and Deputy Prosecutor Erica Nohavik for the work they've done on this comprehensive approach to elder abuse, which I expect, Sven, you'll expand upon after I'm gone. But, you know, our leadership in this field, which we were talking about earlier, was acknowledged when we are one of 9 counties in the entire country to have received an award of almost $400,000 from the Department of Justice, and we have used that money to form this team that is approaching elder abuse in a comprehensive manner. And because I'm heading out of here, I'll let Sven expand on that, but I'm proud of the work that we've done as an office, and I'm proud of the work that they've done with the elder abuse team.
Well, Mark Lindquist, thank you for joining us on Knowing Your Rights. It's been a real pleasure having you here. We're going to take a break here in a moment, but stay with us, because we're going to have Sven Nelson with us, another prosecuting attorney from the Pierce County Prosecutor's Office. We're talking elder abuse, your rights, and resources that are available to you. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001, handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. I help people solve difficult and trying personal problems every day on my TV show, but there's one problem that's just got me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. That's 1 in 5 kids who may not know where their next meal is coming from, despite the fact that there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food out there to feed them all. Now, I don't know about you, but that is unacceptable to me. Luckily, the Feeding America network of good people is out there collecting surplus food and giving hope to hungry children and their families at local food banks all across the country. But let's face it, they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me, like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM, the show that helps you understand your basic legal rights and resources that are available to you. With me today is Sven Nelson, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. We had with us the elected Prosecuting Attorney, Mark Lindquist, but he just stepped out. So Sven Nelson and I are talking about elder abuse and resources that can be available to you, some of the problems, warning signs, and reasons for elder abuse in the first place, why that population is targeted. Sven, when we left off, we bounced around a little bit. I want to get back to some of the reasons why that population becomes a victimized population, and I'm going to throw out a couple reasons why I think that that they're victimized. We talked previously about isolation being one of the reasons that they're a victimized population. Another reason I would think is they can be mentally impaired. They can have problems remembering things, so they're not going to be the best witness. They might not even make it to a trial, depending on their age or their condition. They have physical limitations, so they have to trust people. So that creates some problems, having to trust people that maybe you normally wouldn't trust, but you have to rely on for your mobility, for other reasons, not just mobility, but essential care. And then if you look at the other side of the equation, so one side of the equation is, why is the vulnerable adult in that position of being vulnerable? And here are some of the reasons. They're isolated. They have physical and mental limitations potentially. So they're not able to get around or remember things as well. And they have trust. They have to put a lot of trust into folks that are going to help them, and they rely on folks for essential care, and that could be relatives or third persons, others. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is the people that are doing the abusing. And the question is, why? Why are people abusing the elderly population? Why are family members abusing them? And I think, Sven, you talked earlier about some of the reasons why is there could be a drug problem. And so the abuser needs is either impaired or needs money to finance the drug or addiction that they have, opioid addiction. And so that becomes a reason why they're singling out someone or targeting a vulnerable adult. But I also, and so you could talk about all these things that I've sort of put into play, but also Social Security, it seems that because it's an elderly population, over 60 start to draw Social Security checks. And so that's this line of stable income that comes in. And if you don't have a stable home, if you don't have stable income, well, boy, you could just cozy up to a vulnerable adult that has that type of income and tend to live off of them. And you might be able to take on their identity, and maybe they don't know resources that are available to them. You could open up credit cards in their account. So I can see that there's an opportunity for criminality there. And so if you could talk about that and maybe some of the types of cases that you're getting in.
Yeah, there's a lot there. But yeah, you are absolutely right. Isolation is the most important thing that happens here that kind of allows this type of abuse to happen. And, you know, it's interesting as to why it happens is kind of a mystery. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we often say that people have some sort of a drug or alcohol addiction often, or maybe a gambling problem as well. There's certainly a lot of people that have those issues that don't abuse elders, so we can't lump them all into that category. But we do notice that, you know, 90-some percent are going to have those issues happening in their life, unemployment as well. And you're right, when they sense that there's a steady stream of income, and it could be Social Security, it could be a pension or other retirement type benefits, even IRA, mandatory withdrawals that are happening as the victims age, then that's just a source of ready income for people that aren't good at getting a job or managing, you know, their money, and they tend to do this type of abuse. And so you are absolutely right about all of those things. I think the opiate addictions makes this kind of worse right now. But those folks are committing other crimes as well, other than elder abuse. And so you can't blame all of that on the elders, on the addictions like that. It's interesting too. I mean, I'm thinking about this. It's like, you know, criminals started robbing banks when they figured out, well, that's where the money is. And I think a lot of the problem now is that the money, for the most part, is with the elders.
It's where is the easy money, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The bank's got guards and, right. Cameras and everything else.
Easy money and a steady stream. Every month there's more coming in. And if they start having those types of mental capacity issues, the dementia onset, and you're right, if they can't get to the bank, they're going to rely on others to do banking for them. A lot of elders don't understand computer systems that allow them to do transactions, and so they rely on other folks to do that for them. And that if they're isolated, again, that creates that risk, that severe risk of abuse. And
that seems to me, we keep coming back to this isolation principle, and it seems so for those of you out there listening, and you have there's someone in your family that is elderly, or you're an elderly listener yourself, the one key theme that you need to take from today's show is, don't isolate yourself, or don't allow these folks to be isolated. Make sure they're part of support groups or other groups, whether they're other persons their age, or whether there's some type of racket club or bridge club or some club out there, YMCA, something that other people can get together and talk about issues. Because if you have someone that you can talk to and you tell them about what's happening to them, they can help you. They can help you. And also, it would be potentially less likely for the abuser to be able to take advantage of someone if they know that they have resources available to them, or other folks that are out there that can help them. So they're less of a target, aren't they?
That is absolutely true. And we tell people all the time to, you know, check in on your friends, relatives that you know are isolated or somewhat isolated, and don't assume that some other relative might check in on them or is going to report something. And if there's anything that's suspicious, call Adult Protective Services. If you want to be completely anonymous about things, but you know something funny is going on, you can call Crime Stoppers and you can leave an anonymous tip, and that'll get to the right law enforcement agency, who will then check into that. And so don't assume that someone else is going to do or report. And if you see something completely obvious to you, a lot of people make the assumption, well, somebody else must have already called and reported this, because this is so clear that this caretaker has been exploiting this elder. But don't assume that, because everybody makes that same assumption, and a lot of people just don't really want to get involved. It's not their business. And, you know, we found that, we can't prosecute these cases unless they're investigated, and they don't get investigated unless they get reported.
Yeah, in the first place.
And, yeah.
What are some warning signs then that people can look for that would help them identify cases where there's potential for elder abuse?
Yeah, the warning signs are, you can look at things when you go visit folks, and you can look in their house and see, I mean, there's signs for neglect or criminal mistreatment is just a lack of food, medication around, a lack of kind of clean living environment. Oftentimes you can, cases that we've seen are elders that are living in just squalor while the caretaker is in the penthouse, you know, living large. And so look for those types of things. You know, if someone seems like they might have some dementia issues, make sure that those are being addressed and they're not just kind of left there to figure things out on their own. You know, really make sure they have adequate, you know, food in the refrigerator and a source of heat and some of those types of things. For financial abuse, it's harder to see the outward signs.
That and identity theft, too, because how would you know that someone's identity has been stolen unless you're, like, checking their – you're stealing their mail.
Right, exactly.
To open those things up.
And that's – mail theft is one of the most common ways. I mean, there's elders that can be exploited by someone that's close to them, and they can do it. You know, just by being in the home. But there's other strangers that actually exploit elders a lot too, but they do it more, you know, subvertly, you know, by going to their mailbox or by, you know, befriending them just for the purpose of getting their financial information. And we can talk about that at length about how to prevent some of those things.
Well, yeah, what's the best advice that you think that you give to someone that's potentially that either knows a vulnerable adult or isn't a vulnerable adult about stopping the potential for harm, particularly on the financial side?
Right. One of the things is just to make sure that there are somebody responsible is looking at credit card statements and is looking at any all charges on them. We'll look out for even small discrepancies in things. We advise people to, a lot of seniors like to use their mailbox for outgoing mail, and they pay their bills with checks still. And they put their bills out there, they raise that red flag, and then at 2 a.m. there's people that are out there looking for those kinds of things, and they take those checks and then they open accounts and they do all kinds of things with that information that is just right there for them.
You know, I never thought about that, but that red flag on your box when you're signaling the post office carrier, you're signaling everyone in the world, aren't you, that I got something in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's that's a real danger. But also just opt out. There's ways to opt out of junk mail that has all these pre-approved credit card offers. A lot of those things just come, and if somebody gets your mail or your caregiver sends that back in, it's easy to change the name or the address and those things, and the senior won't even know that they're being exploited until later when they're on the hook for, you know, thousands of dollars.
Well, and if they've been stealing information along the way and then they get the pre-approval credit, then it's easier for them to even just use that to fill out the incomplete information, add it in, and open up a credit card.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, even car prowls. A lot of seniors go for walks and they, you know, oftentimes they'll leave their purse in the car because they don't want to take it with them as they go around the lake or something. And people are watching parking lots, and if you try to stick something in the trunk while you pull into the lot, they will steal that purse, and they'll be at Best Buy buying big screens while you're still walking, and that's a big problem that happens quite a bit.
What about is it still safe to put your registration in the glove box? I mean, if you get pulled over, you got to show that, but it does have your address and your name on there.
It does. Yeah, that's risky too. That's hard. It's really hard. I mean, the biggest advice and what we tell people all the time is they need to try to protect your Social Security number, and that's not luckily on your car registration, but it is often on Medicaid and those types of federal cards. There's now new legislation that's finally preventing the new cards that I think this year are finally not going to have your Social Security number on them, which is
a necessary big change that's coming down the pike finally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, so we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in 2 minutes. We're talking with Sven Nelson from the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. We're talking about elder abuse law and resources that are available to you. So stick around, and we'll be back in 2 minutes to finish up Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. I'm Noah Davis, and I've been practicing law in Washington since 2001, handling hundreds and hundreds of matters. And I would love to help you with your case. If you have been injured in an auto accident or have a business litigation matter, email me at noah@noah.legal or call me at 253-215-4313. That's noah@noah.legal or 253-215-4313. 4313.
Dad, this is fun. I didn't think I'd like kayaking.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. But I think it's time to head back in.
Okay. Can we come back?
Sure.
Tomorrow?
Let's check with Mom. Hey, be careful getting out of the boat.
It's a kayak, Dad.
I'm going to return the kayak. Let's make sure you have everything.
Yep. Can we walk home?
How about a taxi? 233 North Maple, please.
It's a short fare from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Also, find fun activities to do like boating and biking or camping and hiking, plus much more. It's all right in your naturehood.
Best day ever.
A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14.
31? I mean 13?
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. He realized he forgot his homework. I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to Knowing Your Rights, the show about understanding your basic legal rights and resources that are available to you here on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station. We're here with Sven Nelson from the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. We're talking about elder abuse. We're talking about signs of elder abuse. We're talking about things that you can do to prevent it. And we're talking about resources that are going to be available to you. And we're going to give you some more of those details before we wrap up the show today. So right before we took the break, Sven, we were talking about financial type abuses. And you were talking to us about mail being a big problem. And, I was thinking about one thing that people can do to a vulnerable population is open their mail, right? If you're not opening your own mail, I mean, that would lead to, it would seem, to a system of abuse, because you don't know what people are trying to contact you about anymore. Like, for example, hey, you haven't paid your credit card in a year and we're suing you. Or thanks for opening up this credit card for $10,000 in your name, those sorts of things. So you really, one thing that I think that maybe you could do from the financial side is open your own mail, right?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, it's interesting that a lot of times when people finally go to the police and they do report what's happening, they don't have bank statements. They go, well, I don't know. We haven't had one for 2 years, and they're not getting their statements. Wow. And so they're not, you know, checking on that. And they look at their account and they go, well, I used to have 200,000 in there, and now I have 10,000, and it's all gone, and it goes quickly.
Right. So, I guess one of the problems then with the aging population is if they're not part of the electronic population, where they're not using apps on their phone or they're not able to get on the computer and get online statements and those sorts of things, because people shifting to online statements is one way to help preserve your information and keep it confidential, because it's not being mailed. And I know it's still, those things are still subject to abuse too, but that gives you this added safeguard of it not physically coming to your house in the mail, your account information with how much money you have in those accounts and what the account number is.
Right.
And I guess a problem is not being technologically advanced, not being able to use those resources, right?
It is, and not securing your passwords or having, you know, the same password for all of your accounts, which is maybe your birthday or something like that. And those are easily guessed, and your abuser can, you know, try to figure that out and go online for you and...
Yeah, well, I'm taking notes now. No one can see me, but I'm changing my passwords as we speak, and I'm making it more difficult. But you're right. You're absolutely right. And trying to maybe get savvy on some of the electronically available resources, such as just having your accounts online, getting those instead of getting monthly statements, getting them electronically. Those sorts of things could help you. And I know when people have your account number, there's a danger for them to be able to use that account number to withdraw money from your account. And it seems ridiculous that people can do that, but that's what happens. I remember I I had the little feeder amounts, like a penny or 2 cents or something, show up in my account from like a PayPal account. And I called the bank, and it was a major institution like Bank of America. I called them and I said, hey, it was actually Wells Fargo. I called them and I said, I got these little micro deposits in my account. It seems like someone's trying to fish in my account. And the lady, I swear, I kid you not, this is the fraud abuse hotline. I call and I tell her what's happening, and she said, well, what do you want me to do about it? And I go, I want you to stop. And she's like, but what can I do? They already have your account number. And I said, well, it's on my check. It's on my check. I mean, like, yeah. you made me give it out because it's on my checkbook, you know? And anyway, I just thought that's ridiculous, that's the situation, the world that we live in, that account number is almost in some ways like a Social Security number. You know, it's an identifier.
Absolutely.
And people can, if they have other identifiers, they can start to pull money out of your account.
Yes.
So you got to guard that.
Right.
Maybe not to the extent my mom does. My mom is on the extreme end of this because she's so fearful that everyone is like, listening in on every conversation and recording her, and they're ready to steal things from her. And she actually steps on her bags when anytime she puts them down, she steps on the strap so that no one carries it off. And then she might take it to an extreme, but I also take some lessons from that because she's aware. And that's what you're telling us, is we need to be more aware, right?
Yeah, my dad was like that too. Everything was encrypted and hid on jump drives in his closets, and it was hard to find, you know, once he passed away, where all his stuff was. But right. Yeah, while he was alive, no one was going to take it.
So. Yeah, well, that, you know, and that's a good point. I want to ask you some more things that vulnerable adults can do to make them less of a target. And one thing, and transitioning into this is what you just mentioned a moment ago, is having some type of having a will or a succession type planning in place where there is information for people to be able to take care of you if you become incapacitated. So you haven't died, but you're incapacitated. So maybe a durable power of attorney or a living will, healthcare directive, those sorts of things, some directions to those people that you trust, because otherwise, if you haven't given someone direction that you trust, someone else may step in there and take over that responsibility, right?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, it's funny, we all are going to face a time when our health declines, and the time to think about these things is before that happens. Because once your health starts declining, your focus is going to be, and it should be, on getting better, and you're going to be focused on your medical situation more than you are your finances. And a lot of people in that situation let their finances slide. They don't balance their checkbook anymore. They don't see where their money is because they have heart problems and they're working on these things, and that's their focus. And, you know, that's logical. It makes perfect sense. But if you don't think about those types of things, such as power of attorneys, just simple documents that you could figure out, okay, who do I trust, and make sure you have successor attorneys, power of attorneys as well, that when you need them, they're already in place and you've talked that through. If you haven't talked it through, you're right. Someone's going to fill that vacuum in, and it's going to be somebody that might be there to help you, but they're going to help themselves potentially right along the way.
I guess that's another way that cases can come to the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office too, is if someone's bouncing a bunch of checks around town and you start to, the police do an investigation, it turns out it wasn't the vulnerable adult that was doing it, it was the caretaker. That's right. That opens up a whole nother case, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. A lot of times we figure it out once, if someone's in a home and the check bounces to cover their expenses, and people start looking into the bank account, whereas before that, nobody cares. As long as the checks are clearing, no one's going to know.
Right.
And once they start an investigation, it's time intensive. I mean, these things are hard. It's hard for law enforcement to spend the resources to do that, but it's invaluable.
So what are the ways, I mean, we were talking about the financial ways, some of the things that people can do to help protect their financial information. One was to make sure you open your own mail. Don't rely on someone else to open your mail. If you can't open it, open it. Don't stick your mail, outgoing mail, in your post office, your own mailbox with the red flag up. Make sure that it's being delivered, and you should be the one that's dropping that off at the post office if you can, because if the abuser, and you don't know that they're the abuser, because a lot of times this abuse happens without the vulnerable adult knowing that they're a victim yet at that stage of the abuse, right? Until later there's a prosecution or it's too late. So one way that you can do is the mail situation, and you'd want to mail your own mail to make sure it's getting out to the people that you're trying to mail it to, because the abuser could be the person that's taking that mail away, you know, checks or whatever else. What are some other things that people can do to not make themselves a victim or lessen that risk or mitigate some of those risks?
It's really to protect the other information, too. A lot of us keep our tax returns just sitting around in our filing cabinets, easily accessible to burglars or other folks that could come in. And, you know, that has your Social Security numbers on them. It has all kinds of account information for direct deposits as well. And so
It's a good point. It's on my desk at home. It says, right. It says IRS tax return. You know, it's right there.
Absolutely. And we also, a lot of us, too, have old credit cards. Some of us have more than one credit card. And we get those, and maybe we don't use that card. So we just stick it in our desk drawer, and it ends up with all the rubber bands and stuff. And we still have the access, the sticker on there that says, to activate this, call this number. And
Or the PIN number attached to the back of it, you know, because you can't remember all your different PIN numbers.
And some people, they can come in and dig around and find that, and they can call the bank and go, you know, I had this credit card a couple years ago. I never activated. Can you activate it? Oh, I've changed my address, too.
Right.
This is where I am now. And they can rack up lots of stuff without you even knowing about it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So people need to make sure that the vulnerable population, and also those that care for a vulnerable population and that know a vulnerable population, need to make sure that the elder person is not isolated. You know, we talked about that a couple times, to make sure that there's some type of support group around them or other people that they can talk to so that they can report issues. And then guard your financial information. Make sure that you are on top of the financial information. And for other family members, don't just rely on another family member to take care of your aging parents or an aging relative. Try to be involved. Try to get in there and get some information too, because you're part of the equation of support here, right? I mean, you can't just rely on the most senior of the siblings, right?
Absolutely. No, it should be a shared responsibility and communicate about all of those things.
All right, so we're gonna run out of time here on Know Your Rights, but before we do, I wanna just talk about some resources that folks, that listeners can have and end up contacting someone if they know a case of elder abuse or they suspect some. There are some resources out there, and that's the National Center on Elder Abuse. There's also the Administration on Aging. Those are national agencies. In Washington State here, you can report abuse by calling 1-866-363-4276, and that's the Department of Social and Health Services. And so be vigilant, make sure that you're protecting your information out there, and be vigilant about those around you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us on the show, Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. You can always visit our website, www.knowyourrights.com, or you can email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. Thanks again for joining us. Join us next week, same time, 4 p.m. Tuesday, for Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM.